The following programming is sponsored by Carol Captus Holloway. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Well, good Monday afternoon. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. Do you have your popcorn ready to pop for tomorrow? Do you have your beer and wine ready to go as everybody goes to the polls to vote? So important. We're going to talk about that in the second half of our show when we have with us Tierra Bradshaw and Chanel Sherrod from iVote coming on to talk about voting information, about what people can do, casting your ballots, how you can be involved. So super, super excited to have them coming on board. We are live right here at the studios at WWDB. We're live on the radio at 860 AM, as well as the podcast right here at WWDB. This whole interview will be up later in the afternoon, and we are live on Odyssey. And I understand if you ask Alexa, she'll bring me up, and you can send me messages through Instagram and Facebook. But to start the top of our show, before we get into the politics of it all, I think we all need a little more empathy in our lives. Yes, we do, because so many people seem to be lacking it these days. And joining me in just a couple minutes is an amazing writer, Maria Ross. This is her second book that we're going to be discussing, The Empathy Dilemma: How Successful Leaders Balance Performance, People, and Personal Boundaries. Now, let me tell you, when I read this book, it's a book for everybody. And we're going to talk about the pillars of empathy. And, you know, today, the world is just seeming like every day we're trying to survive. We're trying to get to the next day. We're trying to get to the next day. And if anybody's been following the economics report, our economy is on the upswing. It is doing so much better. Stocks are actually better than they were under the Biden administration than they are under the Trump administration. And the best thing that I can say is do your homework, get your notes, do the things that you have to do. But here's what's really important. I know Maria is going to be with us any second. Empathy is so important. Everything that we are doing is something that we do in our lives every day that maybe does or doesn't support other people. Empathy is something that you've heard me talk about on the show many times. And I really want to understand why we're so divided in our country today and why we're more tolerant than we have ever been with just at work, with our neighbors, with our friends. We just seem to be lacking empathy. So jumping on board right now, we have her on the line, is Maria Ross. She is the founder of Red Slice. She is a speaker, facilitator, author, strategist, and empathy advocate who believes cash flow, creativity, and compassion are not just mutually exclusive. She has spent decades helping forward-thinking leaders, teams, and brands connect and engage through empathy to accelerate growth. She is also the host of a podcast that we'll talk about, and she has worked with so many different people, with activists, authors, change makers, leaders, to help achieve radical success through empathy. And she delivers powerful talks to the leadership training workshops for companies such as Salesforce, TBWA Worldwide, New York Life, Christus Health. So I don't want to keep her. And she's done some, this is really cool. She's delivered some dynamic keynotes at venues ranging from TEDx, I love TEDx, to the New York Times, to the 3% conference. So let's bring her on board right now. So excited to have her here to talk about her book, The Empathy Dilemma, Maria Ross.
Maria Ross, welcome to the show. Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. What a fabulous book. Listeners, you want to sit down and pay attention. How are you, Maria? Oh, I'm great. Thank you for the high praise. Fabulous book. We have an election happening tomorrow. Oh my goodness. And, you know, I don't even know where to start because today the world is so much more divided and less tolerant of everyone else. And empathy for ourselves and others is definitely a key to surviving all of this intact and 100%. I feel like I have enough empathy for like 2,500 people, to be honest. So let's... help our listeners understand what empathy is and what it is not.
I love that question because this is something where not knowing the definition of it is what gets in our way and can lead to not great results. So there's a lot of different definitions of empathy out there, and actually it's changed over time. But one that is most accessible for people is that empathy is the ability to see, understand, and where appropriate, feel another person's perspective, and further to use that information to act with compassion. So compassion is empathy in action. Now that I'm connecting with you and understanding your point of view and your context, what's our next right step together? And that action could be, you know, it's not necessarily doing what the other person wants you to do or changing your mind. It could be just giving someone space to vent and listening to them actively. It could be, you know, giving someone support. It could be giving them space to process something. It could be providing a resource for them that they've asked for. So we don't know what that next right step is until we do that active listening. And curiosity is the number one trait of empathic people because we don't guess what their perspective is. We ask them what their perspective is. We don't make assumptions. And what it's not is even more important. It's not about being nice. It's not about caving into unreasonable demands. And it's not about agreeing with someone. To your point, I can have an empathetic conversation with someone, and the goal is not conversion, it's connection. It's being able to understand, well, I still don't agree with you, but at least I understand why you got to that point of view or why you think the way you think. And now we can at least deal with our common humanity and find some common ground.
So, Maria, help me with this. I feel that people are born with the empathy gene, for lack of sizing it up. I don't think empathy can be learned. Either you have it or you don't. You might have some, but some people don't have any at all. Am I right about that, or can you learn empathy?
With all respect, that is not accurate. Science has proven that we as human beings are born with empathy. Yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good. I'm glad we're discussing it because I think that, you know, science has shown we are born with empathy. It's how we've survived as a species, barring outlying psychopathies, right? We're not talking about, you know, anything where it's an actual psychopathy that's preventing you from accessing your empathy. It does look different for different people, right? If you're an analytical left brain thinker, the way that you practice empathy and engage with it might look different than someone who's really super touchy-feely. And so I often, you know, tell leaders that it's about the muscle atrophying for some people, whether they, you know, whether it's from their childhood or the way they were raised or workplaces they've been in, where it hasn't been celebrated, it hasn't been modeled, it hasn't been rewarded, and it's, you know, maybe even been discouraged. But the good news is with my first empathy book, The Empathy Edge, I spoke with psychologists, I spoke with experts and behavioral scientists, where they talk about the fact that if you make an intentional effort to practice empathy, maybe it doesn't come as naturally to you, you can strengthen that muscle again. You just have to get back to the empathy gym and really understand what it is, what it isn't, and go through, you know, this is going to sound weird, go through the motions a little bit, so that you start to build that muscle and it starts to become part of your default operating system.
So, Maria, this leads to the fact that there is an election tomorrow. We have a leader who has no empathy for anybody whatsoever, and his sidekick, I'm going to say it, Elon Musk, has no empathy. How have they been able to gain the power that they have and function in the workplace? They're air quotes, successful leaders in some people's opinions, but yet there's such a cruelty about them. How does that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I want to be clear, I'm not a political pundit here, but
no. But this is
yeah. The way that I look at this is that they are, in some cases, leveraging empathy for the purpose of manipulation with certain people, and so they are telling people exactly what they want to hear, and those people are like, "Oh, I'm finally being heard. I'm finally being recognized. I'm finally being seen." But it's not coming from a genuine place of connection. It's coming from a manipulation place. And actually, you know, there's studies that show that sociopaths engage with empathy because it's how they get people to do what they want. And so we need to make sure that we're leveraging empathy and we're wielding genuine empathy as a way to build connection and not a way to convert or manipulate or coerce. And so, you know, I think that sometimes that gets confused. Sometimes we get caught up in negative relationships where we think someone is understanding us and benefiting us and hearing us. But really what it's about, them pushing their own agenda on us. Empathy requires us to, again, not cave into someone else's unreasonable demand, but to at least say, I'm grounded enough in who I am, and I'm coming from a place of wanting to build a connection with you and wanting to do right by you by hearing from you what you need. It's really not about the golden rule. It's about what they call the platinum rule, which is do unto others as they would have done unto them. And when you look at it that way, it could be used for evil rather than good. And so, you know, hopefully what I'm trying to support is leveraging empathy from a genuine place where it's about moving the relationship or the work forward in a positive direction.
Okay. So I have your book here. I have a million bookmarks in here. So I hope that I can, I hope that we can get through all the questions. But there are challenges definitely associated with empathy in our world, in our workplace. I have worked for bosses that seem to have no empathy. They don't want to listen. They really seem to not care about their employees. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people are feeling this, particularly when you go to our Gen Xers and our Gen Zs. They feel like they're not being heard. So what is your advice?
Yeah, I mean, there was a study done in 2022, about 31% of U.S. adults aren't able to easily see another person's point of view. That's one third. That's one in three, right? So we are admitting we have a problem seeing each other's point of view. And I think a lot of that gets back to some of the myths I talked about, which is that, you know, I think that seeing someone else's point of view will mean that I agree with them. Or I think that seeing someone else's point of view means that I'm giving them what they want. But that's not what we're talking about. And so I think it's really all about understanding that we have different life experiences and we have different perspectives. And the power of bringing those together and harnessing that relies on empathy, relies on us actually listening to those different perspectives, because there's been study after study after study that shows that when you have diversity in the workplace, for example, diversity of thought, diversity of experience, you actually make better business decisions. And so it's because when we look at a problem or a decision or a strategy from different points of view, we can uncover risks or opportunities that maybe those of us thinking exactly alike with the same life experience aren't able to see. And so, but being able to harness the power of that and achieve the benefit of that requires us to put our ego aside. It requires us to admit, hey, I might not have all the answers, or my perspective might not be the only right one. And, you know, what we're dealing with in the workplace, to your point, is a changing paradigm around leadership. So, and I have a lot of empathy for more seasoned leaders. I'm Gen X, but, you know, boomers and beyond. There's five generations living in the workplace, operating in the workplace. It's ripe with confusion, right? And so those more seasoned leaders came up with a different set of rules of what they needed to do to be successful. And now we're like pulling the rug out from under them and saying, no, we need to care about our employees. We need to like get personal with them. So I actually have a lot of empathy for them of going, how do I even do that? My whole career, I've been told not to do that. How do I do that now? And so that's what my work is all about, is trying to help those leaders figure out what it means and what it doesn't, and how do you practice those reps at the gym to ease you into it a little bit more.
So let's talk about that. You talk about the five empathy pillars, being more self-aware, practicing self-care, clarity, decisiveness, and joy. I love the word joy.
Yeah.
Can we have some of those qualities and not all of them, or not have any of them? And what are some of the strategies and tactics that we can use to make them stronger?
For sure. So those are really the pillars of being both an effective and an empathetic leader at the same time, to help you avoid burnout, to help you avoid bending into people pleasing or submission. And so those are really those foundational pillars that you want to look and say, are any of these weak for me? Is that why I'm burning out? Is that why I can't juggle being empathetic and achieving my objectives for the quarter, as an example? Or is that why I'm struggling with being empathetic and I'm also like feeling like I'm doing all this extra work for people because I want to take care of my people? So those are more like foundational pillars of making sure you have those shored up for yourself and for your team culture, so that you can balance the needs of the business with the needs of your people. So just as an example, there's lots of tactics, as you know, and strategies in the book for each one, but we'll just touch on a couple of them. You know, self-awareness, you really have to start with that. You have to get your own house in order before you can show up and be strong enough. Yes, empathy requires strength. Be strong enough to have the capacity to take on someone else's point of view without defensiveness or fear. So that requires some inner work. you need to take on a growth mindset and say, I don't have all the answers. I have strengths, but I also have weaknesses and I have emotional triggers. And I need to know what those are and understand them because I need to be responsible for how I show up in the interaction. So when you are able to do that, you know what you're going to achieve when you're in an interaction with someone. You know what sets you off. You know, maybe I'm not really good at dealing with someone who's, you know, being over emotional in my office, for example. That could be a weakness, right? One of your strengths could be that you're very good at listening and active listening and giving someone space to vent. So that self-awareness piece is really important. A great tactic is to, again, put your ego aside and do some self-assessments. There's hundreds of them out there. There's Enneagram, there's Myers-Briggs, there's Clifton StrengthsFinder. And take some time to say, I don't have all the answers. There's definitely things I can improve upon, even if I'm the CEO of the company, right? We always learn and grow. So take some time to do those assessments and think about what are your emotional triggers? What are your boundaries? And even for your strengths, what are the shadow sides of those strengths, right? If one of your strengths is empathy, there is a shadow side of you might fall into people pleasing, right? So really understanding who we are and how we show up. That's actually the best place you can start.
Okay, self-care. That's you talk about that and how to incorporate more self-care. Is it really sitting down with ourselves at the beginning of each day and having a talk with ourselves like, I'm going to make this a good day. I'm not going to let things get on my nerves. You know, there are things I can't control. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So self-care is not just mani-pedis and massages. I want to make that very clear. Self-care is about doing whatever you need to do to recharge and refill your tank. For some people, that is meditation and yoga, something restful. For me, it's starting my day with my mug of tea without a screen in front of me. That's like a ritual I engage in for self-care. It can be something big. It can be something small. It can be mindfulness experts say like 10 minutes a day to just ground yourself and do something for you to recharge your tank. It can go a long way to being more productive at work. So for some people, self-care is that very passive, restful thing. For other people, it's training for a marathon, rock climbing, running, Peloton, whatever it is. And so it doesn't have to be one thing for everybody. And so for some people, maybe positive self-talk in the morning is something that they do to take care of themselves. But you know what else is self-care? Is knowing your boundaries. It's maybe talking to a counselor or a therapist. That is a method of self-care. Anything, just think of it as anything that helps you replenish and recharge the tank.
Right. Because we should not be walking around angry all the time.
And oh gosh, no.
but yeah, people are.
Exactly. They are. And I think about, you know, think about at the most base level, when you're tired and hungry, are you your best self? No, I'm not. I'm a horrible parent when I'm tired and hungry.
Yes.
Baseline needs.
Right. So you say in your book, I'm going to just read this quote at the beginning of this chapter. Cultivating joy isn't about creating the world's funniest workplace. It's about creating a workplace where people can relax. I can tell you tons of people that feel I got to get to my job and I want to get the heck out of here. I want to go do my business and I want to be gone because they don't like being there. How do you approach a boss? How do you approach a manager and say, hey, listen, we need to have this talk because they might not have any empathy and feel like you are attacking them or the business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the challenge is when you're trying to practice your own empathy and you run up against someone who is clearly not trying to practice empathy. And I get that question a lot of like, well, how do I deal with it? And the answer might be something people don't like, but it's really, you can't control other people. You have to show up in the conversation as empathetic and as you want to be treated. You have to set the tone for the interaction. And even if it's not met with the response that you want right away, you're setting a model for how interacting with you should go. And so if you're able to just give someone space, maybe it's a horrible boss of just like, hey, tell me what's going on for you. How can I help? And they might be taken aback. They may not respond well to that. But if you're able to show how you're asking questions and getting curious, when you walk away and you leave that office, you don't know what impact you're going to have on that person. Maybe after you leave, they're going to realize, wow, I was a real jerk in that interaction because of the way I was treated, and I was treated really well. And so all we can do is model. All we can do is set the tone for how the interaction should go. And when we model and we achieve success, we show everyone in our sphere of influence that success is possible by acting this way. And so you don't have to be the CEO to sort of spark an empathy revolution in your own organization. You can just have like a microculture within your team of this is how we're going to treat each other. This is how I'm going to treat other people. And then when people see you acting in that way and getting results and killing your goals, they're going to go, what's in the water over there? Like, why is that team able to do so much? I want to emulate what they're doing. And that's how you sort of spread that wildfire within the organization of maybe there's a better way we could be treating people to achieve all the results and the benefits of empathy that the research shows.
Maria, would it be out of line to hand a copy of this book to a manager or a boss, or would they?
I love
because
it.
I can think of a lot of people that I'd like to give this to.
I love that you said that, because when I was working on the first book, The Empathy Edge, I had a C-level male leader of a large company, a large retail company, who said, let me know when the book is done, and I'm going to leave a copy anonymously on my fellow execs' desks when it's ready. So, but I did hear a story once. I know, isn't that crazy? I heard
anonymous.
A story once at one of the, I know. And I heard a story once at one of my events where a young woman came up to me early in her career, and it was for my first book, The Empathy Edge. And she said she had a friend who had a really abrasive boss, wasn't listening to her, wasn't implementing her ideas, wasn't giving her time, all of these things. She said that her friend marched into this boss's office with a copy of my first book, The Empathy Edge, and basically said, I want you to read this and I want us to discuss it, or I'm giving you my 2 weeks notice. And to the boss's credit, they read it and said, I had no idea that my behavior was impacting your work performance. I mean, if you get it down to results and not just like you hurt my feelings, but this is how it impacted her work performance. This, you know, luckily this boss was changed and said, what do we need to do to repair this relationship going forward? And it was so wonderful to hear that. Now, not everybody's in a position to do that. I get that. Like, they might get fired on the spot. But you know,
exactly.
If there's an opening, take it.
I love the anonymous. I mean, there's that's a great way to do it. Now, you're talking about The Empathy Edge, and the book that we're talking about, listeners, in case you've missed any of our discussion, you can go back and download the podcast, The Empathy Dilemma, How Successful Leaders Balance Performance, People, and Personal Boundaries. How does this book differ from The Empathy Edge?
I love that you asked that, because The Empathy Edge was making the business case for empathy as a strategic advantage. So it was meant for the skeptics. Here's the ROI of empathy. It's not just good for society. It's great for your business. Then from the work that I've been doing over the last few years, doing leadership trainings and keynotes, leaders were coming to me and saying, I get it. I'm on board. I want to be a more human-centered leader, but here's where I'm struggling. So this book is written as a response to, okay, if you're struggling with the balance of the needs of the business and the needs of your people, as you strive to be an empathetic leader, here are some foundational pillars for you. So the first book, The Empathy Edge, was for the skeptics. This book is for the convert.
Wow. I love it. You have an empathy, similar to a question I asked earlier, empathy check-in list about joy. And I think our world needs more joy. I mean, if we could just have one day where everybody could just get all the bad words and bad thoughts out of their head and just be kind, I think one day in the world would change the world. But what are some things that we can do to check in with ourselves with the joy? What are some things that we can tell ourselves?
That was actually a pillar I added later in the process, because I realized again that that was a common thread. And it doesn't mean the work is joyful at every moment. I mean, I was dealing with workplaces like emergency rooms and police stations. Like, the work is not always joyful. But what was the common thread with those leaders that were able to balance empathy and performance is they encouraged moments of levity, so that even when the work wasn't joyful, people could find joy in the work. They could find joy with each other and build a sense of camaraderie. So, you know, people got really creative during the pandemic and the lockdown with, you know, like really funny Slack channels about what you're having for lunch, or, you know, where you're going on your next vacation when you're able to get out of lockdown. Or, you know, teams were doing team building activities over Zoom, like wine tastings and building succulent gardens and things like that. So I'm not talking about forced joy. And as you may have mentioned, it's not about being the funniest workplace or being the funniest, you know, manager. It's about how can I inject some levity? So one of the ways that you can do that is to encourage work friendships. You know, again, it's not work is work and personal is personal anymore. Like, we are whole human beings that show up to work. So encourage those work friendships. There's data that shows that if you have a friend at work, you are more engaged, your performance is higher, you have less absenteeism, and in industries where it matters, you have less safety incidents when you have a friend at work. So it's about creating that environment where it's like, I want to come here and I want to be with these people.
So one thing that I only have like a couple minutes left with you, in chapter 4, you talk about self-awareness. I might be the problem and that's okay. But I feel, personal opinion, that people that don't have empathy don't realize that they are the problem.
Very true.
So
and that's why
how
we have to encourage.
Help.
Yeah, I think if they want to have better relationships and they want to have better results, with their teams, they need to just finally take the blinders off and say, I need to do some self-assessment. I need to do some self-reflection on, I'm the common denominator in these negative interactions, in these negative results. And that takes a lot of, you know, that in and of itself takes a lot of self-awareness. But that's where, you know, organizations can leverage outside sources to encourage leaders to grow. I spoke to one organization that they perform CEO evaluations. So everyone's getting evaluated in the organization, right? Who's evaluating the CEO? So they are brought in by boards or governance teams to say, no, even our CEO has something to learn. And they conduct CEO evaluations for that person that's at the top of the chain. And the more that you can provide that operational infrastructure for your leaders, you know, I'm talking to the folks in HR right now. I'm talking to the folks who are running those programs, that if you've got leaders that people are complaining about over and over again, and performance is lagging as a result, this is one way that you can sort of bring in an outside resource and sort of get them to self-awareness of, you need to understand that you're the common denominator here. You've cycled some people on your team, all of that.
Oh, that's so important. I gave your bio to our listeners before you came on board here to join us, but can you tell us a little bit more about your podcast, The Empathy Edge?
Yeah, I started the podcast in 2020 as a way to continue the conversation and the research. And so I bring in C-suite leaders, I bring in HR professionals, I bring in thought leaders, best-selling authors, psychologists, social justice activists, just everyone looking at empathy from a different angle as a way to achieve success. And like, you know, I mentioned earlier, as ultimately as a way to make a better world by starting at work.
Wow. I could spend my entire hour here with you talking about this book because there's something for everybody to learn and expand upon in their own life. Where can our listeners go for more information?
Well, the quickest place is they can head over to theempathydilemma.com. That is the page on my site dedicated to the book. They can get a free chapter there. They can sign up for my newsletter, and then they'll also see a menu where they can get free resources. They can get access to my podcast and find out about my speaking engagements and trainings.
So we don't just have a book that gives us help. We have resources for help as well. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Maria Ross, fabulous read, fabulous book. I think everybody should read it, even if you're like me and you have too much empathy.
thank you. I want to help you balance that. Yeah.
Yes, it needs to be balanced for sure. For sure. I so appreciate your time and I welcome you back anytime. Thank you for joining us today. Absolutely. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
And let me just say that the empathy dilemma can be applied to anyone trying to practice empathy while holding other people accountable, while you're protecting your own boundaries and theirs, and stewarding in your own mental health. And this includes everyone from moms to CEOs to government leaders. Absolutely a great read. Snowy night if we get any in the winter. Definitely a good book to read. So let me take a quick commercial break. You're listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We just did our interview with Maria Ross with her book, The Empathy Dilemma, which you can listen to the podcast later. When we come back, we're going to talk a little politics. Yes, we are. But I have some great guests coming on to join us from the Leadership Conference. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets,
our house. Hey, Philadelphia homeowners. To build for looks and durability, side your home with LP SmartSide Expert Finish Trim and Siding, now available in brushed smooth texture. Available in 16 versatile colors, LP SmartSide Expert Finish products will help you create a gorgeous, longer-lasting dream home. That's the beauty of brushed smooth. Learn more about LP SmartSide Expert Finish products in brushed smooth texture at lpcorp.com/philly siding. That's lpcorp.com/philly siding.
Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Yes, that's Alanis Morissette with the song Empathy. I think we could all use some empathy right now. The world feels like it's in such chaos. And hopefully by tomorrow, like I said at the top of the hour, get your popcorn ready, get your wine and beer ready. I don't think I'm going to bed tomorrow night. I really, really don't, because last time I went to bed when there was an election like this, I woke up with thinking one person was winning and somebody else completely won when I thought they had it in the bag. So with that being said, let's talk about our civil rights that are on the ballot tomorrow and how voting in our local, state, and federal elections helps us transform the criminal legal system. And remember, we have a criminal 34 indictments running to hold the highest position in the land. We have somebody threatening to kill people and shoot people. Is this who you want to run your country? Well, I have some questions, and early voting began a little while ago, and tomorrow is the election, and we've seen so many anti-voter efforts across the country targeting immigrants and communities of color and more and more and more. So before I get to this interview, our guests are waiting. I have Tierra Bradford. She is the senior program manager on the justice team for the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights and the Leadership Conference Education Fund. And prior to joining that, she was with the Leadership Conference as a criminal justice policy advocate for the ACLU of Pennsylvania, working on their Smart Justice Campaign and Common Cause Maryland as a program manager, and she's really passionate about protecting people's civil rights and changing our dysfunctional systems, specifically the criminal legal system. So what's most important to her is centering the voice of impacted people and collaborating with grassroots groups. That's hard for me to say. That's a tongue twister. Grassroots groups. She has a justice degree from the University of Pittsburgh School of Law and a bachelor's degree in psychology from the illustrious Hampton University. And her cohort, who's joining us also, Chanel Sherrod, is the government affairs manager at the Legal Conference on Civil Rights and Human Rights and the Leadership Conference Education Fund. And in her role, she supports the voting rights and census and data equity teams in protecting our rights to vote and pursue accurate and equitable data collection for all communities. Before joining the Leadership Conference, Chanel received her Juris Doctorate from Howard University School of Law, where she worked for the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center as a student attorney and interned at the U.S. Commission of Civil Rights, where she helped research and draft several briefing reports on the broad range of civil rights issues. She also received her BA in political science and sociology and from the University of California in Charlotte. So these ladies are on board to talk to us. Our rights, our liberties are on the line tomorrow, people. I can't stress that we need to get out the vote. Let's bring our guests on. I want to say good afternoon, ladies. Thank you for joining us. There's only a day left till Election Day, and we've seen such an increase in anti-voter efforts. AI is destroying the internet and the television right now with misinformation. So what can you tell our voters? What do they need to know about casting their ballots?
Absolutely. I can take this question. Thank you so much for asking it, Carol. When voters come across misinformation, we want them to know that in this day and age, fact-checking is of paramount importance. We've seen how damaging lies can be in the wake of the last election and the insurrection. And we want voters to know that their vote is really their voice. We don't want them to let misinformation or attempts to suppress their power stop them from making a difference. And when they vote, they're using it as a powerful tool to reclaim control over the issues that really impact them most. And there is a tangible change that we can create through voting. And by electing leaders who look like us and reflect our values, we can really shape the future.
You know, here in Pennsylvania, we've been having some serious issues with what they're calling buyer voting by Elon Musk, paying people to come and register to vote that could sway the election here in Pennsylvania. Is there anything that we can tell our voters besides vote your conscience and vote for who you want, not who they say?
Absolutely. So if platform users encounter anything online or in person that may seem fishy regarding the election, we really encourage voters to really check the source of the information and do some background research themselves, even though the onus should not be on the voter to decipher these situations. It really is important for them to do some research and to see if the information that they're being fed is correct and to see if the outlets are doing the fact checking themselves, because it's so important that we're able to make our own decisions as voters and not be led astray by different voting disinformation efforts.
It's killing us here in Pennsylvania. So what issues do you see young voters of color prioritize when they're showing up to vote?
I can jump in here, Carol. It's Tia Rafford. I work on justice issues at the Leadership Conference. And we just want voters to know that justice is always on the ballot. Something that we have at the Leadership Conference is our Vision for Justice platform, which envisions a new paradigm for public safety. We believe we don't have to choose between public safety and equal justice. We can have both. And those things are reflected in this platform. And I bring this up because we know that justice issues are something that, especially young voters between like the 18 to 35 range, really care about. And so this is an educational resource we think that can be helpful to them. And just to know that if they want to see, they have to vote for the people who directly impact the criminal legal system. So the sheriff, the mayor who chooses who runs the police departments or oversight boards, judges are on the ballot. These are things that people can actually elected officials that you can actually vote for who impact the issues that you really care about.
So, Tierra, I guess this would be a question for you. Young people are our future. They're the people that are going to take care of me in my old age. So I'm very concerned about them getting out to vote. Can you explain to them what issues are on the ballot? Because we could have a very bad presidency coming up, or a very good one, or somewhere in between. We never know. So what issues are at stake?
Yeah, so definitely, like I was saying, justice issues are always on the ballot, and elected officials who directly impact that are on the ballot. And so that is something that young people need to know so that can get them out to vote. And again, this is on the state and local level, people directly in their community, or even elected officials on the federal level impact the criminal legal system. But I'll also hand it over to my colleague Chanel to talk more about issues that young people care about.
Yeah, Chanel, I feel like there's more issues. I get that part of it. But what about some of the other things that we're seeing?
Absolutely. So from what we have learned from our own research, there are three main issues that voters 18 to 35 really care about, and that is reproductive rights, education, and justice reform. And what we are really doing, we're using these issues to connect with voters and educate them on how to tap into voting and create the change that they would like to see in the country by really using their power to vote. And we understand that many young people feel disillusioned that the government is not delivering on the issues that matter to them, but we're working to empower them to meet this moment and do their part to create the changes they want to see. And this is why our Instill I Vote campaign is of such importance. We want to educate and galvanize the new majority of voters who are voters of color, young voters, unmarried individuals, to really show up to the ballot in order to be heard. We know that many of these issues affect millions of voters and are significant to many young voters, and to really affect change, they must show up to the ballot like their lives depend on it, because truthfully, they do.
We have talked here about the And Still I Vote campaign pretty much a good part of the year already. But I feel it's so important to get the word out to people, and especially our younger people, because I don't want them sitting at home. They make a difference. One vote makes a difference. And we saw that last year or 4 years ago in Georgia by 11,000 votes or so. So what other words of encouragement can we give to our younger generation, our 18 to 30, as you say, to get out the vote? Because they can no longer register to vote there here in Pennsylvania. But they can still apply for a mail-in ballot today. So what can we tell them?
Absolutely. I can kick us off here. We can let them know that no matter what, your vote is your voice, and it will always count. It is the key to participating in our democracy, and everything is at stake with our vote. We can encourage them to not get discouraged by any rhetoric of discounting their vote or voter suppression efforts. In this day and age, voting is the most direct way we have to really ensuring that we are full participants in our democracy.
Ladies, are you aware of, I didn't mean to cut you off, but are you aware of any voter suppression going on right now in states that have early voting?
Absolutely. There are some disinformation efforts and voter suppression efforts going on in several states and localities across the country. We know that we've had some issues with restrictive voter ID laws around the country as well. And with this, we want to ensure that our voters, and especially with our Instill Our Vote campaign, know their rights, know when they can register, know when to show up to vote, and are not disenfranchised and discouraged by these efforts to not show up to vote.
And you have the V4J, the Vision for Justice, that is really important for helping people understand the criminal legal system, to help improve the criminal legal system. Mm-hmm. How do we stress to people that they can make the changes in our community and in our country for criminal reform?
Yeah, well, first, it's really important for folks to get educated about the issues. And so that really is something that we really like about the platform. It's not just like telling people the policies that they can be asking for, but educating them about the system and about those policies. And the three principles that really guide the platform are equity and accountability, holding those in power accountable while shifting resources towards investments in communities, human rights and dignity, building a system rooted in healing and human dignity rather than oppression and punishment, and rebuilding communities, which is reckoning with and repairing the harm caused to communities by making investments in the people that really need it and the people that have been impacted by the system. And what's so great about the platform is that it comes with a toolkit that specifically helps people who want to organize in their community around different issues in the criminal legal system, and kind of gives them a guide on how they can take the first steps.
Chanel, because of your position, Government Affairs Manager, Voting Rights and Census and Data Equity, are you seeing data out there that's being skewed in one direction or another that, again, is inaccurate? And how can we make sure that we're getting the right information? Because I just heard as early as last week that the AI copies that are out there are so perfectly done that you can't even tell you're on a bad website.
Absolutely. So there are several efforts to really encroach upon accurate data collection and really have like miscounts of certain communities of whether it be immigrants or just communities of color. And what we say is we hope that individuals are able to really do their own research and look into what something may be as AI or as if it's not AI. A lot of voting misinformation is occurring around this new generation of social media platforms and AI spreading misinformation. And that is why our Instill Our Vote is so important. And especially at instillourvote.org, our website, we have a page on misinformation. So you can really get more information on whether something is from AI, how to handle it, what to do, and to ensure that you're getting the most accurate, up-to-date information that we can.
Right. And you mentioned immigrants tonight. I want to make it clear to our listeners, as I did last week, illegal immigrants, even documented immigrants, unless they have citizenship here in the United States, cannot vote. And it will upset their voting rights in the future. And they will not be allowed to become a citizen if they vote illegally. So I just want to repeat that from our guest that we had last week. Accurate information is so important to ensure that democracy is working for all. So where can our listeners go to get more accurate information?
Absolutely. So for more accurate voting information, you can go to andstillivote.org, andstillivote.org, where you can find information about registration, about voting, about issues that are really plaguing our young voters. Those will all be contained at andstillivote.org.
And while I have you for a couple minutes, people that have been incarcerated in the past and have been exonerated, let out of jail, serve their sentence or whatever, are they allowed to vote today?
It depends on what state that you are in. And so, again, that is something that you can find out on andstillivote.org and other voter education related organizations, is what specifically the law is in your state regarding whether you have a felony conviction and whether you have the right to vote at this moment.
So a quick question, I was going to let you go, but a quick question popped in my head. The former president, Trump, has been indicted on 34 counts. Is he allowed to vote?
I would just tell President Trump to, wherever he is registered to vote, to look at what the law says in his state to see if he's able to vote with a felony conviction.
There you go. Ladies, you've had a great platform here to get the word out and bring people to And Still I Vote. Is there any information that I have missed that you want to share with our listening audience?
Yes, I would just plug our visionforjustice.org. That's where folks can have access to our Vision for Justice platform, and also where folks can get access to that toolkit if they want to get involved in their community. And also, we have the civilrights.org, which is where you can learn more about the leadership conference as a whole.
Great information. Voting is here. It is time. In a couple days, we will know who our president is, hopefully without trauma. I don't know what to say. It's a little scary. But I thank you both, Tierra Bradford, Chanel Sherrod, for joining us today and getting the word out. You need to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol, for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. We are under the gun, folks. Listeners, please, please, please get out and vote. I want to take us to a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, I really want to explain what tariffs are to you. I'm going to do this again tomorrow on my home improvement show from 8 to 9. But a lot of people are like, yay, he's only going to impose tariffs. People don't understand how that is financially going to affect our pocketbooks. You're listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. Let's take a quick commercial break and we will be right back.
Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988 and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets,
our house. Hey, Philadelphia homeowners. To build for looks and durability, side your home with LP SmartSide Expert Finish Trim and Siding, now available in brushed smooth texture. Available in 16 versatile colors, LP SmartSide Expert Finish products will help you create a gorgeous, longer-lasting dream home. That's the beauty of brushed smooth. Learn more about LP SmartSide Expert Finish products in brushed smooth texture at lpcorp.com/philly-siding. That's lpcorp.com/philly-siding.
I can't even remember.
That's Europe.
I'm not even sure who's... Oh, okay. I can't believe I thought of that song at the last minute. It is the final countdown. So let me explain a couple things to people so that they know what they can and can't do tomorrow. First of all, you need to know your rights on election day. If you run into any problems or have any questions on election day, call the Election Protection Hotline. That's 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E. So if you have any problems or feel intimidated or anything of that sort, call our 866-OUR-VOTE. Please know that if the polls close while you are standing in line, you still have the right to vote. That's very important for people to know. If you make a mistake on your ballot, you are legally allowed to ask for a new one. Put a big X on the one that you have, rip it up, and ask for a new one. You might get into the booth and decide maybe Kamala is the right person for us. Because you know who I'm voting for. I don't mind saying it. If the machines are down at your polling place, for any of you in the listening area, and you go and they say the machines aren't working, ask for a paper ballot. You have the right to ask for a paper ballot. So please do that. Now, I also found out through a lot of the research that I'm doing is a lot of people don't understand exactly what tariffs do. You know, former President Citizen Trump keeps saying, oh, I'm going to do 25% tariffs, 50% tariffs, 100% tariffs. Do you all love your iPhones and your Androids and your TVs? I hear a resounding yes out there. Well, things that you buy that are imported, like cars, like your cell phones, like your iPhones, your computers, your tablets, if a tax gets put on those goods, it doesn't affect the country they're coming from, like China or Thailand or Mexico or Canada. The tariffs affect you. Tariffs are increased prices on imported goods, making domestically produced goods more competitive. What that means is that 25%, that 50% is being added to your iPhone. So it's not affecting the countries overseas, it's affecting you. So if you want to complain about the increase in prices now, where do you get the increase in prices then? So what this is supposed to do, tariffs are supposed to encourage consumers to buy from local producers. Tariffs have been in place for centuries in the United States since 1789, but it can have unwanted side effects such as higher consumer prices, and the market distortions can harm domestic consumers. Wait till I get on it tomorrow morning on my home improvement show. Wait till you have a contractor having to go buy goods that definitely have to be imported from another country. Oh my God, listeners, you do not want tariffs. And if you're applauding tariffs, I'm like, please go read the book on empathy and figure out why you want to increase what you're paying for the goods you already get. I mean, people are already paying $2,000 for an iPhone. Now you're going to be paying three. So you really, please, 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 I beseech, do your homework. Don't just read what's out there. It's so easy. Just look up tariffs. If you want to pay more out of your pocket under the former president, then vote for him and you will be crying every single week, I promise you. Now, I'm not saying that Kamala Harris is any better. I mean, is this the best the United States has to offer? I don't know about that. But please, please, please do your due diligence. If you want tariffs, you will be paying more. And leading economists have said under Trump's plan, we will go bankrupt and we will be paying more. With that said, let me get off my soapbox. You can listen to my show tomorrow morning, Home Improvement Fix and Facts, from 8 to 9. We're going to discuss it more. I have two words of wisdom for you as we leave the show. From Abraham Lincoln, the ballot is stronger than the bullet. And another one from Roald Dahl, somewhere inside of all of us is the power to change the world. One more. Elections belong to the people. It's their decision. Abraham Lincoln. So with that being said, go fill out your ballot tomorrow. Go vote. Get up off your butt. Go do it. Democracy and your freedoms and a woman's body and her right to choose her own medical care are on the ballot in Pennsylvania tomorrow. Please keep this state blue. Make it blue. Go vote. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week. Get your popcorn ready, and we'll be back to talk about it after it's all done. Pay it forward. Do something nice for somebody. And yeah, that's it. If you missed anything, listen to the podcast. Take care, everyone.
Philadelphia homeowners, to build for looks and durability, side your home with LP SmartSide Expert Finish Trim and Siding, now available in brushed smooth texture. Available in 16 versatile colors, LP SmartSide Expert Finish products will help you create a gorgeous, longer-lasting dream home. That's the beauty of brushed smooth. Learn more about LP SmartSide Expert Finish products in brushed smooth texture at lpcorp.com/philly siding. That's lpcorp.com/philly siding.